stories of true crime, strange mysteries, weird disappearances, wild adventures, unusual places, spooky things, funny things, and stories that listeners ask me to tell, but spoken entirely in whisper. And every story is a true story. However, please be aware, whisper talk can sometimes be hypnotic. So, if you are behind the wheel of a moving vehicle, I recommend that you postpone this show until later, such as when you are in the safety and comfort of your home. Finally, if you are someone who does not like whisper talk, then you should stop listening now, and I mean right now, because this is a podcast for people who like whispered stories of true crime or mystery, and that is what this podcast is all about. My name is Kit, and I am your host. This is episode number 12. Thank you for listening. It's nice to be back, and it's especially pleasant because I am back within the 2 weeks that I promised on the last episode. I hope that you are just as happy and thrilled about that as I am. This episode is sponsored by E.L. Thornton and Lana Gorgona, my latest contributors on Patreon. Thank you, thank you, thank you, E.L. Thornton and Lana Gorgona. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because in this life, you can either take things for granted, or you can take them with gratitude. And listeners, yes, you, all of my classy cats and cute kittens, I want you to know that, as far as this podcast is concerned, I don't take anything for granted. Because, basically, here is the thing. Right now, the number of listeners is growing by leaps and bounds. And I've even gotten a few contributors on Patreon. Meow. I am so grateful. So very grateful for that. There is no way that I would ever take for granted that those good things will continue to happen. So instead, I choose to be grateful, deeply grateful, for every single listener, every single contribution, every single email, every review on iTunes, every suggestion, and literally everything else related to this podcast in any way whatsoever. So, once again, I will thank all of you, my listeners and contributors. I am so grateful to you, and I will continue to be grateful in the future. Not only that, I really do like spending time with you, so I truly hope you have a little time to spare. priceless. For others, it has no value. It's the most perishable commodity in the world, and yet it lasts forever. If we lose it, we are unhappy. But for the most part, we don't mind giving it away. For instance, think about this podcast. It takes an extraordinary amount of time and effort to put together each episode. Yet, for the typical listener, each episode costs nothing. But listeners, just in case you might be interested in making that exchange a little more fair, well, guess what? You can be a sponsor of the podcast and have your name mentioned on the next episode by simply making a contribution of any amount through the Patreon page for Whispered True Stories. Now, at this point in the episode, I usually spend a few moments giving updates or other information to listeners, along with greetings of one type or another for new listeners, and of course, returning listeners. However, I have a strong feeling that most listeners would prefer that I just move on to the featured story as quickly as possible. So, with that in mind, beginning with this episode, I plan to go directly to the featured story, along with any listener warning that is necessary or appropriate in regard to the story. The only exception will be if there is something that, in my opinion, is particularly noteworthy or important for listeners to hear. And listeners, if you have a few minutes, simply get ready and I will tell you a story. However, as much as I would like you to listen, I am first going to give you a short heads up about a few things so you can decide for yourself if you want to continue to listen or not. Warning, on this episode, I will tell the story of the mysterious disappearance of a college student in Vermont in 1946. The chain of events surrounding the incident are so unusual and distressing that it is almost as if she suddenly and instantaneously vanished from the face of the earth. It is an extremely strange story with very few leads and very few theories. Yet, it is absolutely true. So, now you know. Don't say I didn't warn you. And on that note, I will say one more thing. This episode is not recommended for children because it could be a bit frightening for young ears. Parental discretion is very strongly advised. Earbuds or headphones might be a good idea. So, with all of that having been said, I will move on to the featured story. Our story begins in Bennington, Vermont, on December 1st, 1946. The This was a Sunday, and it began as just an ordinary day for Paula Jean Weldon, an 18-year-old sophomore at Bennington College. Now, it is sometimes said that if your day is truly an ordinary day, then it is a gift. But in the case of Paula Jean Weldon, December 1st, 1946, was no gift. Not for her family, not for her friends, and it definitely did not end up an ordinary day. Although, it began in a very ordinary way. Paula had a job in the school dining hall, and on this particular day, she worked two shifts. She came back to her room and chatted for a while with her roommate, Elizabeth Johnson. Then she suddenly told Johnson, quote, "I'm all through with studies. I'm taking a long walk," unquote. Weldon then headed out of the room at approximately 2:45 p.m., according to Johnson's recollections. She was wearing a bright red coat with a fur collar, jeans, and sneakers. This was the last time that she was seen by anyone who knew her. It was a cold day. However, despite being winter, there was no snow on the ground at the time. But the temperatures were predicted to be sub-freezing and snowy by night. It is very possible that Paula was unaware of this forecast because she was definitely not properly dressed for colder weather. Or it might be that she was only planning to be out for a short while. But this is only the first of several mysteries surrounding Weldon on that day. Shortly thereafter, Danny Fager, the owner of a gas station that was across the street from the college gates, claimed to have seen a short, thin, blonde young woman in a red coat. This certainly described Paula's general appearance. She was barely 5 feet, 5 inches tall, or 1.65 millimeters, and her weight was about 111 pounds, or 50 kilograms. According to Fager, the girl ran up the side of a gravel pit near the college entrance, then ran down it again. Then she went out of view. Later, search parties would call in a bulldozer to sift through the gravel pit on the chance that she might have been buried alive. However, after a diligent search, nothing was found. Just before 3 p.m., a man named Louis Knapp, who was driving on Route 67A, picked up a girl who was hitchhiking just outside the college entrance. His description of the girl was a match for Weldon. According to Knapp, the girl slipped as she climbed into his truck, and he warned her to be more careful. But nothing else was spoken between them until Knapp let her off still is, a local newspaper. By coincidence, a large amount of the information for this story is from the news reporting by the Bennington Banner. Mr. Whitman said that he had warned her about heading up into the mountains dressed so lightly and at such a late hour. She ignored his advice and continued into the woods anyway. Night fell, and there was no sign of Weldon. Elizabeth Johnson, her roommate, was reportedly very nervous, but she did not tell college authorities until the next morning, when college president Lewis Jones was notified of Weldon's disappearance. President Jones called Weldon's parents in Connecticut to see if she had gone home for some reason. Weldon's mother collapsed from shock and was so distraught and rattled that the family doctor ordered her to be confined to her bed to avoid a nervous breakdown. Paula's father, W. Archibald Weldon, headed straight for Bennington to launch an all-out search for his missing daughter. He arrived in Bennington and immediately organized a large group of volunteers from all corners of the community, including local residents and members of both Bennington College and the nearby Williams College. Classes at Bennington were suspended in order that all students could participate in the search. By the evening of December 2nd, however, many of the students had reportedly become frustrated. They felt that the search was poorly organized, and they said so to both Paula's father and President Jones. Mr. Weldon was an engineer who was well known in Connecticut and New York, so he used his influence to call in state police from those states. At the time, 1946, Vermont did not have its own state police, and so, unfortunately, the search for Paula Weldon was haphazard, disorganized, and extremely lacking in resources. However, Vermont did have a state investigator by the name of Elmo Franzoni. He was quickly put on the case and took over the search with assistance from representatives of various police departments from New York and Connecticut. The students and other local volunteers who had been searching the woods and wilderness for Paula now switched their efforts to raising money for a reward, and together they raised over $5,000. Sadly, all of these efforts, the searches, the fundraising, and everything else produced no results. There was still no trace of Paula. A family that lived near the end of the drivable section of the long trail claimed to have seen her as she began her hike. One member of the family was, for a time, a person of interest in the disappearance. In addition, there were a number of tantalizing and unquestionably strange tips that kept investigators looking. For example, the claim by a waitress in Fall River, Massachusetts, that she had served dinner to an agitated young woman who allegedly matched Paula's description. And for some reason, Paula's father believed this tip so strongly that he literally disappeared for over 36 hours in order to follow up, but without telling anyone where he was going or what he was doing until after he returned to Bennington. This led some people to actually start to think of Mr. Welton as a prime suspect in his daughter's disappearance. This belief was rooted in an incident that had occurred during the week before Paula's disappearance. Paula was expected to go home to Connecticut for Thanksgiving, but instead, she called her parents and told them that she would be staying in Bennington. Apparently, Paula and her father had a falling out not long before her disappearance, according to Paula's roommate. However, she retracted the statement and instead said that although Paula had been quite depressed, it had no connection with her father or her family. Many speculated that Paula's depression was centered around a long-distance relationship with a boy, but in contrast, her father at one point put forward a theory that his daughter had a boy from her hometown who, quote, wanted to call on her, unquote, and could be a suspect. However, Mr. Welton never provided any evidence to substantiate this claim. On December 16th, Paula's father packed up his daughter's belongings and returned to Connecticut, but not before verbally slamming Vermont for its lack of a professional police force. He was extremely agitated over the alleged stupidity of the leaders of the official search, and especially the fact that there had been no records kept on the first 10 days of the investigation. This was not overlooked by the growing army of reporters from across the East Coast of the United States who had swarmed upon Bennington to cover the story. The negative response that the state received in the news media in the weeks following Paula's disappearance swiftly led to the creation of the Vermont State Police in a legislative session in July 1947. As soon as Mr. Welton left, the out-of-state reporters also began to leave Vermont. However, newspapers located within Vermont continued to cover the story as front page news until late December. Volunteer searchers would continue to make expeditions of the area near the Long Trail, but by early January, harsh winter weather and lack of hope was it? In 1955, a lumberjack who had been in Bigford Hollow near the Long Trail said he had followed a girl matching Paula's description into the woods. More importantly, he told a friend that he knew where Paula was buried. The man was soon questioned extensively by the local prosecutor, and ultimately, the man said that he had been trying to get a reaction from a friend as a kind of sick joke, and that he had no actual knowledge of Paula or her whereabouts. The case remained unsolved and was nearly declared cold until 13 years later, when an unidentified skeleton was found in Adams, Vermont. Investigators excitedly awaited the results of an analysis on the bones. But unfortunately, the bones ended up being too old to be Paula. In the years since then, nearly everything about the case has been shrouded in mystery, weirdness, speculation, and occasionally outright falsehood. Numerous psychics have given their claims and visions, beginning with the week that the disappearance of Paula hit the newspapers in 1946, right up to the present day. Many researchers have connected Paula Weldon to something called the Pennington Triangle, which is a geographical location surrounding the town of Pennington, in which a number of prominent and unusual disappearances have occurred. However, there is no evidence that any of them are connected to each other in any way. I will mention, in passing, that there have been several podcasts over the past 2 or 3 years that have told the story of the alleged Pennington Triangle disappearances. But in this context, I will take a short detour into the topic of podcasting in general. It is a literal miracle that, unlike the radio, TV, and movie industries, podcasting has grown in a way that is collaborative and cooperative rather than competitive. And the best outgrowth of that is the fact that podcasters are almost always very willing to help each other. But there are also a few negative aspects of this. Some podcasters have been victims of plagiarism by other podcasters. And to combat that problem, several podcasters deliberately add one or more trivial bits of false information in their stories. So, if they hear that same false information on another podcast, then they know that their story has been plagiarized. which you will not find in any written article. So, basically, in a nutshell, I am telling you that if you hear any podcast about the Bennington Triangle disappearances, it might not be 100% true. But, on the other hand, please take note, I will make you this promise. I will never plant false details in any story. The stories that you hear on this podcast will always be true. Okay? Got that? Good. Moving on. The most recent theory in regard to the disappearance of Paula Weldon is that she might have been the victim of a serial killer. This theory was put forward in 2010 in a book by historical writer Michael C. Dooling, based on similarities that he found between Weldon's disappearance and those of Connie Smith, a young girl who went missing from Salisbury, Connecticut, and Catherine Hull, a 22-year-old who went for a walk in New Lebanon, New York, and whose skull was later found on a hillside in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, just a few miles away. Those three disappearances might sound distant from each other, but they all took place along a fairly straight north to south line. In addition, as noted by Dooling, there were a number of serial killers within that geographical area. Connecticut, Vermont, and Upper New York State over a period of 15 to 20 years, including during the time period when Paula Weldon vanished. Finally, according to Dooley, quote, "The Paula Weldon case has been done an injustice over the years. This puts a new slant on it. Maybe she didn't just disappear," unquote. Now, in the present day, it is unclear whether the disappearance of Paula Jean Weldon is currently considered as an active missing person case by local police or state investigators. However, the thing that can definitely be said is that the Vermont State Police came into existence almost solely in response to the disappearance of Paula. And since the creation of the Vermont State Police in 1947, they have been legally in charge of all wilderness search and rescue missions. In addition, possibly for that reason, the case of Paula Weldon is not considered as a closed case. It officially remains open, and tips from the public are still welcome. And that is the end of our story. So, listeners, what do you think happened to Paula Jean Weldon? Was she kidnapped and held captive by some crazy person or some demented family? Was she murdered? And if so, why has her body never been found? is the body. Some people have speculated that she might have ran away with a secret boyfriend and started a new life. But why a secret boyfriend? Unless he was a career criminal, there would be no reason for them both to go off the grid forever. It has also been suggested that she might have started walking on the trail and then just kept on walking. In other words, that she might have decided, for some unknown reason, to put her humdrum life behind her and reinvent herself in an exciting big city somewhere, away from family, friends, or anyone else who knew her. However, the problem with that theory is the question of, why would she do that? Yes, there was a rumor that she had a falling out with her dad, but it doesn't seem to have been serious enough to cause her to take off and never be in contact ever again. Or, possibly, you might be a person who believes in some of the wild conjectures that are associated with the Bennington Triangle Theory. So, perhaps she was abducted by space aliens or Bigfoot. Listeners, which possibility do you think is correct? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Send me an email at whisperedtruestories@gmail.com. By the way, I'm currently planning a special episode on which I will feature the comments and theories that listeners have sent in regards to the stories that I've told on the episodes up to now. I promise that it will be very soon. No, really, I mean it. It will be very soon. Now, listeners, one more thing. Speaking of future episodes, you may remember that on the most recent previous episode, I said that I would have a listener review segment on this episode. I've instead decided to have a separate episode. Basically, a mini episode on which I will feature two things, and only two things. A story followed by the listener review segment, and nothing except those two things. I plan to release that special episode in the near future, so keep your eyes open for it. I will release a similar episode whenever there are 5 or so new listener reviews for the podcast on iTunes. Next, I am very excited that this podcast is finally back on schedule and that I was able to release this episode within 2 weeks of the previous episode. Meow! Hooray! But if you want to make sure that the show continues to stay on schedule, then please make a contribution to the Patreon page. Just go to www.patreon.com/whisperedtruestories. Be sure to type that as all is that there are 3 levels for contribution, but Patreon calls them tiers. There's a $1 tier, a $5 tier, and a $10 tier, and you will get rewards at each of those levels. And simply as a teaser, I will mention just one of those rewards. If you like the sound of my voice, and if you make a contribution of $5 or more, I am willing to make a special audio recording just for you, in whisper. It can be anything that you want. A short story, a favorite quote, a birthday greeting, a joke, an outgoing voicemail message, a ringtone. The possibilities are endless. Seriously, they really are. Also, if you'd rather have me speak in my ordinary voice instead of my whisper voice, that's fine too. Just let me know. In addition, you will be given access to any episode that is posted solely on Patreon. Okay, well, that's just a glance behind the curtain. So, after you're done listening to this episode, please take a moment and go to www.patreon.com/whispertruestories, and you'll see everything that you need to know. But probably the easiest thing to do is to go to the show notes for any episode of this podcast. They all have a clickable link for the Patreon page. Listeners, I hope I can count on you. Now, I will move along to the brand new segment of the show, Podcast Recommendations, in which I will suggest 2 other podcasts that you might want to try. First, I will ask you a question. What do these things have in common? Vengeance. Diabolical. Betrayal. Bad hair. Leaning. Well, if you are a fan of the TV show Dateline, then you probably have heard or thought each of those words. However, if you would like to dig a little deeper into those topics, then I suggest that you check out the weekly podcast, A Date with Dateline. It is hosted by 2 young women relationships. This podcast explores all of the different ways in which friendship takes place. It shares amazing stories of friendship and discusses best practices and the difficulties that friends can experience. So, if you want to learn how to love on your friends just a little bit more, embrace your friends a little more, or just appreciate your friends a little more, the Best Brothers podcast is for you. Because without our friends, who would we be? And this brings us to the end of the podcast recommendation segment on this episode. So, moving on. Listeners, if you like the podcast, including the concept of the podcast, you can help out the show by going to iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and rate, review, and subscribe. Hopefully, only 5-star ratings. Pretty please. By the way, listeners, I just want you to know I am doing everything except setting my ear on fire to release a new episode every 2 weeks. And on the last episode, I even asked you to pray for me to help get a new episode recorded and released on schedule. And hey, guess what? It worked. This episode was finished, edited, and released right on time, within 2 weeks of the previous episode. Meow. So, fingers crossed, and with your help, I will do the same thing again. And speaking of you, if you would like to contact me, or if you have any comments or other input that you want to give, you can either send me an email at whisperedtruestories@gmail.com or on Twitter at whisperedtrue. And with all of that having been said, my name is Kit, and I will leave you now with this thought. You